Welcome to the Stinging Fly podcast. My name is Nicole Flattery. The Stinging Fly has been publishing new writers and new writing for the past 25 years. We take a particular interest in promoting the short story, and for this podcast, we ask a writer to root around in our archive and pick out a story to read and discuss with me here. On this month's episode, I'm joined by writer Sheena Patel, who has chosen to read from Oisin Fagan's story, Triangle. Triangle was published in issue 39, volume 2 of The Stinging Fly. Sheena Patel is a writer and assistant director for the film and TV industry. She is part of the Four Brown Girls Who Write Collective, and her debut novel, I'm a Fan, won the Discover Book of the Year at the British Book Awards 2023, was longlisted for the Women's Prize for Fiction, shortlisted for the Dylan Thomas Prize, and it was Foyle's Fiction Book of the Year 22 and Observer Best Debut Novel of 2022. Welcome, Sheena.
Hello, thanks for having me.
Ah, you're very welcome. So I'm just going to ask you to read a little bit from the story, Oisin Fagan's story, and we can discuss it then.
Okay. Triangle. It could have been a passionate love triangle, but he was always on his phone, and I could never remember what colour her eyes were. She mistook everything for ageing, teeth becoming transparent, grimacing in sunlight, a growing attachment to silence, coughing in the morning. There was not enough compression in their lives, and she wanted me to pay more attention to the signs, of which there were none. At night in winter, her blood ran hot, and she fidgets, anxious to have sex with someone who doesn't have my smile. I see her first in a supermarket, lengthening a queue. Narratives emerge and unravel in her face over the course of a shopping list. Her sighs are medieval, and she looks different in every photo, but only from herself. She reminds me of dying, perhaps, but I don't remember why. An age of sentimentality has eclipsed her friends, and in its shade they create new concepts with which they attempt to justify their dislike for me. At the time, I was dreaming of bright days, unemployment benefit, and pussy so hot it would blister our fingertips. In the beginning, she was allergic to her lover. Wherever he breathed, sores would emerge. Eventually, the inside of her thighs looked like the craters of the moon. I wanted her a little less every time, but I still wanted her. Sooner or later, we all get used to it, and she becomes inoculated against me. So it's time for him to leave, in an inglorious kind of hand-me-down fashion. Often, when I am in storage, when I am stored, I pretend the other boxes contain monsters. This is the difference between you and me. 1. Made lonely by forces within her control, he is centrifugal force which repels generosity, and she did not want to make the effort to be misunderstood. I spin away, forgetting. In her phone was his number, and I could tell by the digits and the flat functionality of his one-syllable name that too many options had closed him up. I call giddy children little bitches to their faces in order to regret it later, and sit at the edge of public fountains taking pictures of pigeons with her in the background, a blur on the edge of her own life. I can convince them to do anything. Frigidity and status were aspirations they slipped into, and since they had nothing good to spend their money on, I had no guilt whatsoever when I spent it on tracksuits. I was always forgetting the things she didn't do anymore. She lacks the necessary tragic moments off which to hang the loneliness of her nights. There is a certain boredom to his dreams and fears which allowed him to bumble their way into marriage. A deeper pastiche of emotion with the cruel and calm inevitability of a focused child who destroys garden furniture at family barbecues. Their dreams were borrowed, but the pain was real. 2. You, I suspect, wake up in the night, eyes full of tears, missing your family because you're an uncaring son. I spend her mornings by the windowsill thinking up excuses to continue wasting his time. It is enjoyable to become the cliché projected onto me. He once fell asleep on my shoulder during sex, which just made him fall in love with me. I've no potential anymore, not even his. You were the worst summer of my life and everybody knows it. You don't even want me, you just want children who look like me. Memories used to intoxicate me, but now everything is softer to the touch. Still, one day I will think of having memories fondly. Very occasional invitations seem incessant, and the mornings are quiet. My face is formless, but so is yours. Every time I close my eyes, a fresh sensation buckles under my skin, sending a message out across the planet that you should open your eyes in the next room. After a certain point, life becomes similar to itself. Death becomes an indifferent prospect, like a forthcoming meeting with a distant relative at lunchtime. Too many headaches have taken the joy out of doing nothing. The little anxieties covered in festivals that invented the calendar so I get a job. This is my final failure. You are about to witness the first victimless suicide. Not my own, of course, just the sanctity of my private life, which I used to call ambition. One, I would never remember our first night together. On our second one, though, shadows fucked against the wall while we were asleep on our backs, not touching each other. Cold nose in the morning, a square of light on the wall, a shadow that nothing projects. These are the moments which tie together the message you never communicated. She shifted her failures off herself by blaming me, but some night responsibility must start, and I won't be in the building on the day that it all ends. I have a childish infatuation with large breasts, and she has a childish infatuation with being understood. The evenings were too long and dark to have no vices, so she addicted me to hope. Still, she was disappointed before I even took my clothes off. Many lives have a certain destiny that you can unravel in passing. One, if I were ever to think of him, which I don't, I would imagine he would want to be obsessive, but was worried I would find his fixation unattractive. So inevitably, like cancer patients, we gravitate towards the gentle stability of hobbies. He had something to prove, but no one to tell. Our mornings together drained away like blood from a bag. Occasionally, I meet violent people and they are kind to me, sensing my neutrality in the face of life. The one time I saw him was in a social space of self-impressed people making histrionic attempts to intensify their mediocrity by blaming it on me because I'm so beautiful and so fragile. There was a time 20 years ago, he tells me, while being slightly retarded and giggling too much was attractive. We all missed those irredeemable days. She never belonged to me, but he did. I shocked him into a deeper lethargy than the one he had previously inculcated. He spent his whole life seeking women's validation and then failed to recognize it on the one occasion I granted it to him. I gave him his only moments of life. My jealousy, which was beautiful, could have animated a certain similar beauty in his features if he hadn't withheld the toll you must pay to lose something. I was the master of his sadness, but I never used it, and she was never the chance to reject me. Oh my God, what great lines.
Yeah, it's a story full of great lines. Very funny.
Can you speak
to me about why you chose this particular story?
Because it sort of reminds me of me in that totally narcissistic sense of like, that great writing? Yes, it reminds me of me. Except it does it so much better than me. It feels like a dream and like, I love the image, I chose it because it's so lonely. I love lonely writing. Mm. It's my favorite writing. And those images and the sentences are almost smashed together. It's like two halves of two ideas that totally go together, but almost shouldn't. And also the voice is just like, it's just the kind of voice I like reading in literature, which is like deeply anxious, quite cruel. And
kind of charismatic.
And charismatic, yeah. There's something yes, I will. I'll carry on reading. There's another little section on being jealous. And it's just, I love that sort of writing, like Kathy Acker's. I adore Kathy Acker and that really searing writing where it is so harsh and brutal and sexy. Mm. And it's not describing sex, but it's sexy, you know, and very erotic and neurotic. I love that. I love the neuroses of people. I've just started watching Peep Show, which, you know, whatever. I know it's been out forever. I've never watched it. I've been very like, I'm not watching that because everyone loves it. So obviously it must be shit. Yeah. And I've just started watching it and I'm like, why have I deprived myself of this?
Yeah.
It's just so good. Some of the lines, I was drinking tea while I was watching it the other day and it just made me spit my teeth out. There's this one line about Johnson not being black, really, and I was like, this is unbelievable. It's so bad. Like, he's not really black. You're like, what the hell?
I think I watched it when I was like 18 or 19 and it was like one of those things where I just like didn't go to college for 2 days and I just watched like loads of it.
I'm so deep in it. I think I'm in the show. I'm obsessed with it, but it feels quite of this, I don't know, us, really. I don't know. I know the Irish and English identity, obviously I'm not going to say that they're the same, but it's that same sort of like UK's very cruel but funny.
It's the idea that things are funniest when they're the most miserable.
Oh God, I love that. I know. I'm actually quite a positive person, but I really love listening to sad music and things that are really depressing. Whenever I'm in my car and I've got the aux cable, my friends are like, why is every song that's so depressing? It's not vibey at all. I'm like, but it's nice to cry on the M4. I don't know.
But I think in this way that what you're saying about neurosis in writing and obsession in writing is something I really gravitate towards as well. Like, you know, when someone is just like overthinking everything, and that's how it really feels in this, because it feels very truthful.
It feels to me, it feels very truthful, that sense of, also, I think the thing that I really love about Peep Show, and actually I didn't realize when I'm going to keep going on about Peep Show because I'm obsessed with
it. That's okay.
It's that sense of that writing as well. It's the interiority of it. It's when you read a book and it's like, oh, this party's happening, but in your head you're like, I'm at the summer of when I was six. I don't know, you know, you're just like, you're just somewhere else, and where your mind is, you're never really where you are. I think that disassociation and failure is just so delicious. I don't know, I love it.
I remember watching it with a friend of mine, and she was like, oh, I guess like, it's just, you know, they'll never move out and they'll never have different lives and they'll always be together, and like that it's suffocating and like miserable and stuff. And I was like, yeah, that's why it's so funny.
But also because, and so human, because who hasn't chosen comfort and dysfunctionality in their life, you know?
Yeah.
And also, like, you see it, because I'm watching it so intensely, you see them being like, I fucking hate you at the beginning. So like, actually they really care. They start to really care about each other.
Completely codependent.
So codependent. Like,
if one of them left, the other would die.
Yeah,
you know?
It is like that. I think maybe that's what, to make it literary and not just a podcast about Peep Show. But I'm so happy to talk about Peep Show for the next hour. But with Triangle, it's that same sense of like that needing someone like oxygen, which is so toxic, but also like you kind of want it as well.
Yeah, yeah. It did remind me a little bit of your own book, the story.
Thanks, Nicole.
All the great writing. But the kind of obsession and watching and, you know, trying to anticipate what someone's going to do and then being disappointed when they don't do it, or if they even do it, and trying to please someone, you know. And I really love in stories and things when you get that kind of close reading. Did it remind you of your own work?
Gosh, I'm such a dick, aren't I? No, I think that's why I wrote the stories I love to read. So I love that, because it's exactly what I want to read, is people being completely and utterly destructive, and watching them do it. It's just incredible. Yeah. There's a book called Widow Basquiat.
Oh, I've read that.
Oh my God. But there's this scene that I can't get out of my head when she describes it. And maybe I've even layered my own like ideas of what's happened in it. But she's broke, working waitressing jobs, hiring limos and driving around New York looking for Basquiat. And then when she finds him, he's just like, get away from me. And she's pleading with him, and she's got all this like crack in the car, just being like, come, we can get high. And he just won't. And sometimes he does, and sometimes she doesn't. It's that almost complete self-effacing and devotion and sacrificing to another person.
There's a bit in that, it's a Jennifer Clement book, and there's a bit in that where she's talking about the girl that Basquiat's seeing, and how Warhol is sitting at the table pointing out girls, they're at a party and he's pointing out girls that Basquiat could date instead of her, and she's just like, sitting there. And I think about that all the time. I thought about that.
I know,
a lot.
I think about them so much. They like, they run in the background of my head. And I think, I can't believe she fought Madonna. She fought so Madonna brave. And he painted it and she won.
Yeah.
And I mean, there was a point, I think they went to Japan together, Basquiat and Madonna, and she was just like in New York being like, what the fuck? And then she becomes a pop star, I think, to get his attention, and is really like culty successful, and then stops it after a year because it doesn't change anything. And I don't know, I just find that really romantic, but also awful.
Yeah.
And she says that the hardest thing she ever did was leave him.
It's such a great book. Did you think about it a lot when you were, did you think about it at all when you were writing your own book?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I've thought about that and François Gillot's My Life with Picasso. Have you read that?
I haven't read that.
That's such a good book because it brought the idea of that sort of World War II documentarian photographer sense of like reality into a book. And she does that sort of with a ghostwriter or with a journalist. She spans the 10 years of her relationship with Picasso, and it's like the women and the power and the power dynamics in between the women and how art was all mixed up into all of that. But I really, really love that story triangle. I think it's really gorgeous. It says like super true things, you know, and you, it's hard to know what love is really, isn't it, sometimes? And I think when you're in something and you're just like, oh, I mean, it's hard
to
know.
No one's ever asked me what love is on the podcast before.
What's love?
It's the first time.
What is love?
Maybe I'll try and do my best.
Go on, then.
But gosh, I don't know. I don't think it was in Widow Basquiat, though.
No.
I was going to ask, so do you think like love and obsession, which are in the story, Do you feel like there are things that you will return to again in your own work, like again and again, or things that you'll think about?
I don't know, because I don't really know even how to write another book. So if you did have any tips, I'd be happy to take them.
I'm not sure either.
But yeah, so I don't know, because I don't know. I do love it, though. I love that idea of it, but I'm so far away from it. I'm just in this place of like eternal yearning. So maybe I will stay in this obsessive place, but it's I don't know, it's a hard thing to grab hold of, I think, or let go of. But it's all it's the books and the writing I feel most drawn to is that sort of teenage longing. I feel like an eternal teenager.
That's a good place. I think that's good.
Is it?
Good for your work.
Good for your work. I don't know about anything else, though.
Good for your style. Maybe. Your classic. I was going to say, both our books were mentioned in this piece, I don't know if you saw, in The New Yorker, called The Year of the Female Creep.
I did read that, yes, when I had my three free New Yorker.
I know. I always panic that I'm like, oh, I can't read. And then, you know, what did you think of that? How do you feel about being
female
called
a creep? So I think people like to categorize because they love to sell things to people.
Yeah.
So I think this like female creep thing, you could put that in a bookshop table and be like, these are the female creep books. I don't know. When I wrote it, I didn't think about stuff like that, so I don't it's weird to even group like that, but at the same time, I don't know, it's kind of got nothing to do with me really. It's nice to be talked about in The New Yorker, can't complain. But
as long as it's nicely,
how do you feel? Because they briefly mentioned me only, didn't they?
Yeah, there was a grouping of books. I think like Emma Klein's The Guest and that Biography of X.
Yeah.
And our own. I feel fine. I think it's unusual that, or it seems constantly that it's books by women that are grouped in this kind of manner. But also like the character of the voyeur, like the creep, exists throughout literature.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a... But it doesn't bother me, you know.
Yeah. I don't know whether it's...
I've gotten much worse reviews.
Don't say that. That's not true. That can't be true.
I've definitely gotten the paper and picked it up and been like...
I did that. I read everything because I don't think I will after this book. I think I'll stay away from it. I'll try to anyway. Yeah. But someone tagged me on Twitter in this one review from this one place. And I was like, oh, obviously going to get complimented, and then read it and was like, why did this person tag me and say, well done? I was like, this is a terrible review.
The worst ones are when you think you're going to get a compliment.
Gasped,
and you're like,
no. Oh.
not today.
But then at the same time, you know, I was like, well, at least they're talking. They're talking about it. They could have decided not to. At least you got trashed, rather than ignored.
Yeah, and also, you know, it's kind of like love. You still feel something.
Yeah. You still felt it. It might not have been positive, but you're alive. Yeah.
I can't take that from you.
I wasn't ever really intentional with my writing. I feel like I didn't do the whole thing, you know, with the, I did it all the wrong way around and inside out.
You wrote a great essay for the Stinging Fly. I was going to ask about for that. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yes. Olivia Fitzsimmons is like the most incredible editor ever.
Yeah, she's a lovely woman.
She was very patient with me.
Yeah.
And I found it really hard to write it because I was trying to do something and then it really wasn't working. And then I had to try it again. And I think I just didn't want to be honest. But then I was like, is this shit? I don't know. Maybe it is. And then we were like, we have to go because it'd been like 6 months. Of working on it. So Olivia's like, I met Olivia in Rome because we've got the same Italian publisher. So, and they took us to an Irish pub. She was like,
classic Rome.
Yeah. When you think of Rome, you think Irish pub. So we're in this Irish pub drinking Guinness and then just chatting. And she's just lovely. She's just so good. And then I came to the Dublin Knit Fest because of that essay, which was amazing. So I've never been to Dublin. Or Ireland before.
Did you have a nice time?
I had such a nice time and I'm so jealous of like what's going on for you guys right now. I know it's hell with housing. You've kind of been London-fied, haven't you?
Yeah. It's
really crap, isn't it? But but the energy is unbelievable. Like the conversations everybody has and you can, I mean, I'm sure there's a darker side to it and I was only there for a weekend, but it seemed that everybody was really happy for one another and that there just seems lots of conversation and it just feels like the things that you read in books, like, oh, there was a bar and da-da-da walked in and blah, blah, blah walked in. I don't know. It was like one of those, like, all these people in the room together. But it feels like, I mean, you guys know this, but it does feel like really exciting things are happening for you. Whereas over here, we're fucking depressed.
I have noticed.
You noticed? We're like,
I have read the news.
Shuts down.
I think in Dublin, what works quite well is that it's quite small. So people do seem to pop up at everything. There's only a few places you can go, whereas London is bigger.
Bigger. I just think everyone's just really, really squished. I don't know. It just feels like you've just got all the air is just squished out of your body. It's a very weird vibe here. The vibes are definitely off in England, but I'm happy for you guys. I'm glad it's all going very well for you.
You can come back anytime. You're very welcome. But we'll be happy to see you.
I was really pleased to see the scene and, you know, be in it, albeit in a very at the edge way. But it's amazing what's happening for you guys right now. And it just seems very supportive.
Oh, it is. I think it really is.
Yeah.
And this essay, the one you worked on with Olivia.
Yeah.
I found the way you wrote about putting a book out into the world very moving and very accurate. And I hadn't, I probably had all those thoughts, but never articulated them properly. It took you a while to work on it, but can you?
Yeah. I try to do this a bit, I don't know, I'm finding it, I can't inhibit the voice of I'm a fan and also can't get away from it as well. And I think I started to write something in that voice and Olivia was just like, no. After a while, I was like, no, this isn't working. And it wasn't, it really wasn't working. Yeah. And I was like, maybe I've lost all my magical powers. And then she was like, just tell the story of how the book was published. So I did. And I was like, okay, I'm just going to be vulnerable in it and not hide behind this sort of voice that would be a bit jabby. But also it does feel a bit indulgent to complain the bits that you're complaining about because it's a dream that I've had my whole life and I know lots of other people have had their whole life, but I was just so surprised by the ways in which things changed, because everything happened really fast. And it was all very unexpected because I thought I was with such a small publisher, like one person. She's one person, with Rough Trade Books. And so I just thought it'd be one of those books that go to the indies, and that was it. Like, I didn't expect more than like a few hundred to get sold if I was lucky. So when all of the things happened, it was just this massive, like, and then this happened, and then this happened, which is an incredible place to be in. But I didn't anticipate what it would do to my relationships or my friendships, or what it would do to me, kind of more feeling like an object rather than a person. And that, like, there's bits of you, like the book just like lives this life by itself outside of you. And
just because we were talking about that Jennifer Clements book, but even that bit where I was saying Warhol was pointing at different people that, you know, in front of his girlfriend that the Basquiat could date, I think it's almost the same thing. People are talking about you like you're not there, the whole, even though you are there, you know, and it's such a strange experience.
When I read books when I was younger, obviously I didn't never ever thought I could talk to the author ever. I was like, this is just a book, and I'm in relationship with the book, and that's it. And it would just be this quite secret, not secret like secret, but private and communion with the book. And if I didn't like it, I wouldn't tell anybody. I just wouldn't say anything about it. And yeah, like this idea of being discussed online, or your work being discussed online. And then I think this idea of like art is, I've kind of, after the Women's Prize thing, which felt to me was the most intense experience so far of like of the whole thing, the being on the Women's Prize long list was like the most intense thing, because it suddenly just went, I don't know, it just was like the sun was on all the time and I couldn't switch off and I couldn't concentrate on anything. And I was just getting like ping, ping, ping on my phone. And I think it did do something to my mental health for a little bit, which I'm fine. I think it made me grow really thick skin. So now I'm fine. But like to have people overtly being like, I hate this book. And like I threw it across the room from the bath. I was like, cool. Fair enough. Well, yeah. cool. But so it was just it's weird and lovely. Like, you know, I went to a book party a few months ago and like literally made it all about me. It wasn't my book. And I was like, this is cool. So there's things like that. And, you know, I have in some respects wanted a lot of what has happened and probably want more. I want more of it. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to have to get used to that. The book's 2 years old now from the hardback, and it's in its kind of weirdly like, okay, it's happened and there's new books now. And that's a different phase. That's a different thing to like experience. But when I was in the middle of it, I was like, yes, give me more of this, but then didn't anticipate like some other stuff that happened.
Yeah, I think it's exciting and you're getting read and everything, but everything's like a little bit louder than you expect it to be. And I think it's hard to concentrate on something new. I ask out of curiosity, do you read short stories often?
I do. I haven't read them in a while, but I have read them most of my life. Like the best ones, the one I do think about a lot is this Roald Dahl one about spiders in the bath.
And I don't know
that. Oh my God. Is his, when I was a teenager and I read all his books and then read his short stories, and I was like, these are dark. These are not for children.
Yeah, yeah.
I like Doris Lessing, and I've recently read Saba Sam's Send News.
Oh, that's a wonderful collection.
She's amazing and like such a great writer. And yeah, I do go to short stories quite a lot, actually. I think they're a really hard form to master. I think if you can do a short story, you can do anything, really.
They are. And they offer something different from novels. I feel like when you're trying to get over a novel, it's nice to read short stories, you know, and see that things can be sort of, you know, abstract and weird and strange again. Not everything has to cohere in the same way as it has to in a novel, you know.
I feel like Triangle is a bit like that. It's like, what are the relationships between all these people you don't really understand? You just sort of let it wash over you and it's a bit weird. But you're like, what does 1, 3, 2, what do these numbers configure to? You're like, what does this mean? Are they people? Are they voices? So it's...
He also does that thing I really love in a story where it feels like he's changing his mind?
Yes, totally.
Like the characters are changing their mind. The whole time you're through the story, they're like, I hate you, I love you, you do this, you do that, but it's me as well. And I love them. You can see characters kind of battling through their own
thoughts. Have you read Amy Key's Arrangements in Blue?
No.
Oh, you should read it. But I've never listened. Oh my God, never watched Peep Show, never listened to Joni Mitchell. Everyone's going to fucking hate
me. You're catching up on all these cultural highlights.
I'm catching up on culture. So nice. That's because I just listened to like Fat Joe when I was a kid.
he's a poet too.
Yeah, he's a poet. I'd say he's a poet. I just listened to trashy R&B and I'm like catching up to all these like things I should have done. But I'm just listening to the first song in Blue and she's like, I hate you, I love you, I hate you. And you're just like, yeah. I don't know, it's amazing to... Those emotions are so close and it's hard to tell which one's which sometimes, I think.
Oh, definitely. And I think you did that really well and I'm a fan too. I feel like she's constantly having that sort of, that battle.
Yeah, hate you, love you.
Yeah. Can you talk to me a little bit about the process of writing that book? How did it come about, or what were you thinking about?
I was depressed because it was lockdown, and I just put out some pamphlets with the collective, and Nina from Rough Trade Books was like, "Write a book," and I was like, "What do you mean, write a book?" She was just like, "Write one," and I was like, "I don't know how to do that. What are you talking about?" And she was like, "We'll help you." So I just would gather all of these pictures from the internet that I was really fascinated by, like standing stones and like doomsday clocks and Trump in the White House with like loads of McDonald's. I was just like collecting all these images. I was just like
a classic.
Yeah, and I was like, the White House, McDonald's, mountains of McDonald's, what's happening? I was like, what does this mean? And they changed the button. There was this rumor that you changed the button for something really important to like a button for Diet Coke. And I was like, is this true? And I just was collating all these pictures and then was writing bits in between, and I was like on Hinge at the time, which I'm not now, but I was on Hinge and I was like screen grabbing conversations from Hinge. I was like these transient relationships and then the attacks on the Capitol happened and I was like, I don't know, it just clicked something in my head. The image, like how weird the images were and the devotion that I saw in it, weirdly, and how hate was being confused for love. Like they were destroying inside, and there's this video of one of the guys being like, this is an act of love. And I was like, what? And I was thinking, how do I make these people not weird or alien to me? Because I was like, all this behavior has to feel connected to something. So I was just putting all these connections together. It just was like writing scraps, really. And then, like, I'm obsessed with all these books about, like, women being enthralled to these artists and these artists treating these women really badly. And wanted to connect, like, what was happening politically to, like, love and fandom and hierarchies and social media and followers and fans and all of these things. And I was asking a few friends at the time when I was writing, I was asking a few friends, I was like, do you follow someone that you hate, but you don't follow? Like, do you track someone? And they were all like, yes. And I thought,
it is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, there are some people that just like, actually, you probably have to stop for half a day because you feel so bad about yourself. And then I was like, these ideas of like femininity and womanhood and how actually maybe we're not all supportive to one another, because how is it that we can make each other feel this bad sometimes? And the competition that it can foster. And also, yeah, a lot of my friends were getting married in the pandemic and I was just like, oh, right, like men become lifeboats in a way to like safety. And I was thinking that's how like the patriarchy works. And like if you're single, there's like a different sort of experience of the world. So it's like smooshed all these things together and then found the voice through really found the book through the editing process, really. I just did this like voluminous make, and then it was almost the same amount of time to edit it and like really get it down. And I was edited really well. Like I was edited almost like the novel was a poem. And like Will and Nina made me fight for each word, basically. And I'd get like big circles being like, you've repeated this four times. And I'm like,
That's a great kind of edit though. You want that?
I like, oh my God, you do.
You use this word too many times.
At some point, I was like, do they hate me?
Then they're probably, yeah, they're doing a good job. If you want, maybe they hate me.
Maybe they hate me. No, maybe they just hate me. No, but it was a really great editing pro. Like, it was just really great. And the voice was very compelling. And it disappeared, like, totally, like, flew. Yeah, because I'd be like in a place and I'd be like, what would she do? Or like, it would be like, what would she do today? It just like flew out of me, really. And I don't know what to write next, or if I even will ever write anything next, like another book. I don't quite know how to do it again, to be honest, because I don't quite know how that one happened. I feel like I was in a bit of a dream, and like a very associative dream, and things just made total sense. I felt like I saw the structure of the world, which sounds so egotistical, but I just felt like I was like, oh, all of these, like, these, it's like that meme with that, all the maths equations. I was like, I get it. I understand everything. Let me write it down. And now I'm like, I don't get anything. I'll just stop. Maybe I'm too old now.
I think just every book is different. I think how you approach it and how you think about it, and even if it's influences and stuff.
How did you write your book? How did yours come along?
Slowly. It's tough because mine required like a lot of research, and I'm working on something now that doesn't involve any research.
Is it going as slowly?
Not as slowly. Like, it's set in where I'm from, like in the middle of Ireland, and it's so great because I'm like walking down the street is research, walking into the shop, looking at a guy who went to schools with Instagram. That's research.
That's research, yes.
That's the greatest research. But the thing I was going to say about your novel and also the story is that they're both very precise. So the language is very precise. Yeah, and it's something I think when I read Oisin's work a lot, and your own work, is that you've thought about kind of every word. And is that the kind of writing you like to read?
I do. And actually, when I'm reading Wild Houses, I've just started to read it. Yeah. And there's two lines so far. And I was like, oh, God, they're great. Whereas he describes somebody as like their face is like a derelict church, vandalized church. Yeah. Vandalized church, and someone else's face is like a pail of milk. And I'm just like, God damn it.
You're the second person to say to me today that Wild Houses is amazing. It's not even 2 o'clock.
It's not even two.
Am I going to see after this?
And then I read another book. It's a translation, actually, but the language isn't so pinned. The sentences aren't so pinned, and actually you're just like, what's happening? But I don't know, that specificity of that image is poems. Like, I'm not a poet. I write terrible poetry, but I'm really drawn to those lines. They're incredible. And really, there's this one section in I'm a Fan about, it's called There's No Business, and it's about the why brown people might want to go for these creative jobs or creative industries. And that took me 12 months to get down to that. I was writing it and writing it and being like, this isn't exactly what I want to say. This isn't exactly what I want to say. I don't know. It's just this, to me, it felt very sculptural to write. It feels quite sculptural in a weird way, like bricks and cement. Like, it's very, like playing chess. It's like playing, I hate maths and I'm shit at it. Like, I can't add numbers up, but language to me feels very mathematical. The kind of flow of one sentence to another, of like, where is the body? The body needs to move from the bed to the sink, put the shirt on, leave the room. You know, they can't leave the room without putting the shirt on, because those things really fucking annoy me when you're like, but the shirt, you went out topless. Yeah, yeah. It's those things, that I love writing like that. I also was edited extraordinarily toughly. Mm-hmm. That's not a word, but I was really put through the ringer. And if I wasn't, that language, I wouldn't have been pushed, you know. I was pushed really well. And I think that's what you need when you're making something, is someone to be like, oh, you could do better than that. Or what does that, or cut that. Actually, you don't need that. You said it twice, like you said it once and it's good.
I love when someone says you can do better than that, because it's sort of kind of showing like, in like a little bit of faith in you.
Yeah. It's like,
come on, you know,
you like, can, I, yeah.
You can. And how important do you think it is to have that relationship with your editor, like someone who is going to push you?
I know writing is this very solitary thing, but I don't treat it like that. I see it as quite collaborative, and like with Will Burns, he's a novelist and a poet, and like I trust him implicitly with everything, and he's taught me so much, as well as like giving me permission to like break any rules that I want. He wasn't like, this is the way we do it. He was like, you find it, and any feedback I'd get, he says it in like, it's such a way to create space where I can take ownership of the change. If he's pushing me, he won't say, do this. It's like, he'll ask a question, or there's some like weird ethereal way he does it. And also with Four Brown Girls, not that we write together, but we are creative together. I think there's a lot of energy in groups and in partnerships. And I really love what can happen between two people and how you are challenged. And especially if you're working with someone who you look up to, I think really amazing things can happen, because not in a denigrate way, but you are put in competition with each other. You know, it's like, I think you're really great, so I'm going to try and be the best that I can be. It's like that kind of thing, rather than I want to crush you. It's like, no, I want to be able to like stand next to you and be like, I did really well. I did as well as I think you are too. I think being edited in a way that you can still hold the art yourself, rather than it feel like some other voices are taking over, is really important, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I totally agree. So just while we're on the subject, I want to get to something else in a second, but can you think of any books or art or anything where it's gender flipped, where it's a man is obsessed with a female artist? Because I can't. I feel like I'm going to be thinking about this
for ages. No, that's a really good question.
Yeah.
I just realized I referred to Oisin as a woman and I didn't realize he was a man. So I apologize, Oisin, but I love your work. Think he'll mind. Do you think he might? It felt very feminine though, because it's so obsessive, but
he's very
kudos to you for channeling obsessive girl energy. So I apologize for that. No, I can't think of that. Men don't really get obsessed with women like that though, not for their brains. Do they? That's a mad generalization.
Yeah, no, I think that's a probably a correct one though. I feel like I can think of lots of stories where men get obsessed with. There's that great episode of Peep Show where Mark gets obsessed with the girl that works in the shoe shop.
What's in the shoe shop?
I can't remember what season it is, but I think she comes back into it later.
Maybe you can't spoil it for me, so
okay.
Don't spoil it. But Mark does actually get, but he doesn't get obsessed with women because of this, not because they make stuff.
Yes. Yeah. It's so rarely because of their art or something they've made.
No,
I will
Jeremy
think about this all day.
Wants people who are in relationships already.
It's kind of like the story.
I know. I love them so much.
I know we were talking about the John Porter poem, which you put in a previous issue, and would you like to read that? It's very short.
It's super short, but I feel like it's very prescient for what's happening right now in Gaza. Well, there is a war on by John Porter. My mother had added through a sad smile. I did a usual grunt that, after the phone went down, asked what war. A glance outside revealed nothing, a slight breeze playing the dry leaves for suckers. The sky was as huge and odd as always, with no hint of bombers. I discussed lunch, but my son was ambivalent when he would usually rile against onions. Whatever, I'm worried about the war, he muttered. I turned on the radio, who were only playing smooth hits, even the metal stations. A leaflet was thrust through the door with instructions on how to resist honey traps and a bulleted list of arguments to use against those who said there was no war. And on the street, my neighbour with children in cases is shoved in a government bus to take her with sneers back to the war that she fled from. Oof.
Yeah, a great poem.
Great poem. All right, it's so good, isn't it?
Yeah. I confess I don't read much poetry. Which is terrible, but that was
you will have your writing license revoked.
They're gonna take it away. They're gonna burst in here. Take me away.
There's a great collection by Boyega Odabanjo, who died in the summer at a festival, and his two pamphlets are incredible, and I'd recommend them. They're like so linguistically adventurous. So they're really, really great.
Oh, okay, I will definitely get them.
Yeah. They're like £6-7 each or something. But they're both incredible. They're just, you're just like, oh, it's just a banger after banger, you know? You're just like, these are such great poems.
Well, I think we are...
Are we at the limit? Finished. Yay.
We're at the limit. Sheena, that was delightful.
Aww.
Thank you so much for your
time. Sorry I went off about Pete's show. Sorry for misgendering you, Sheena.
I'll just be sad that no one else misgenders Sheena. Or talks about Pete's show in the future.
As much as this. I've like dumbed Stinging Fly down.
I'm going to figure out a way to bring it into everything.
Oh my God, would you? This reminds me of an episode of Pete's show.
Actually. Thank you, Sheena.
Thank you.
I'm a Fan is a wonderful book, so I urge everyone to read
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
If you enjoyed this episode, please share it. If you're new to the podcast, please subscribe. We'll be back next month with another writer reading a story from the Stinging Fly archive. Access to the Stinging Fly's full archive is available to anyone who subscribes to the magazine and to our patrons. Taking out a subscription is a great way to support what we do. Subscribe at stingingfly.org. I want to thank the Arts Council, who provide funding for this podcast, and for everything else that the Stinging Fly is doing to seek out, nurture, publish, and promote the very best new writers and new writing. Thank you for listening.